Group Summer School at the Cenacle, Greyshot, Wednesday afternoon, 15th April 1981. After the light, it is dark. And after darkness is over, there is, or at least there may be, light again. And such is our life in our dualistic, ambivalent, mortal state. So there arises conflict. Conflict which we have to approach in the right way. The way which will transform both our little light and our little darkness and integrate it all into the supreme light. There is a wonderful presentation of this in the Rig Veda. In the Rig Veda, the Surya, the sun, is the symbol for light during the day. And Mitra, it's rather interesting, Mitra, friendship, love, is the sun during the night. He shines by night. But as and when the person has purified himself, then there shines Savitri. Because with the purification comes the state of constant enlightenment. And that is represented by Savitri. That is one of the reasons why there is that famous verse in a hymn to Savitri, which is used for invoking the enlightened state whenever the teacher gives any instruction. Our question will be, how shall we enter that state of Savitri, the constantly enlightened state? And we have been, during this week, considering certain aspects, at least, of that. And this morning, we tried to sum it up in terms of the living of the ethical life, the mindfulness, and the meditation or contemplative prayer, which culminates in communion. And in the state of communion, of course, there is the perpetual light. There is no end to that. I hope that during this week, something of light has emerged in some way or other in all of us. And with the emerging of the light, selfness has become obscured. This is very, very important, because unless and until selfness is wholly transformed into selflessness, there cannot be perpetual light. Communion is a transcendent state. It is not a worldly state. And it emerges naturally, spontaneously, as and when all our worldliness has disappeared out of our everyday consciousness and our everyday understanding of life as such. This light of Savitri, which is the permanent light, shines by night and by day. This light of Savitri is something which cannot be sought deliberately by us as we are. It is the light which emerges. We release that light. That is to say, by not obscuring the light, through our purification, that light naturally shines. You can take a homely analogy. If all the curtains are drawn and the door is shut, the light of the sun is not likely to penetrate into the room. All we have to do is to draw back the curtains, open the windows, let in light and air, and it is there. The light is perpetual. It is our impure psyche, impure in the sense of its dualistic, ambivalent functioning, and the confusions in our mind, born principally of all our egoistic drives to satisfy our own deluded misconceptions about ourselves and our relationship to the world, to our fellows, and to transcendence itself. When we have freed ourselves from that, then that light becomes perpetual. And it is always there. When one goes through the dark states, that light will find its way in if we remain quiet. One of the meanings of resist not evil, do not fight against evil, do not fight against the ill state, the confused state. Just observe it, watch it. Because this instrument of salvation which we have, our power of attentiveness, is the medicine for all our illness. The diagnosis and the medicine, where the psyche is concerned, are one and the same. They are not different. It is not a case of analyzing or being analyzed by somebody and told that this, that and the other is the cause of your illness or suffering or whatever it is, and this, that or other is the cure for that suffering. That is not the case at all. Because this light, this state of enlightenment is something which emerges from within the individual. Others may help, yes, they may stimulate, they may soothe, they may comfort up to a point, but all that will disappear when the circumstance is such that we are unable to deal with it. If you get the exceptional circumstance, and you will always get it, then once again we are in darkness. But if we have learned how to let the mind and the heart be at peace, be restful, how to let them know their Sabbath, so to say, then in that Sabbath there emerges the light and there is peace with it. It will, in all likelihood, the vision which ensues, the light which one sees, will not be in line with what the brain will think out, because the brain is somewhat plagued with all our conditioning and with our desires, our personal desires, our self-orientedness, our ambitions, our envies, and all the rest of it. So that will always produce the state of conflict. But look within and remember that looking within means looking at transcendence itself. And you will look with eyes shut, with ears closed, which means that nothing of the self and the self's desires and pursuits interfere with this. That is the meaning of it. That's how you look at transcendence. Transcendence has no desire, has no... We of course have the phrase, "Thy will, O Lord, not mine." But the Lord has no will of His own. We understand will as personal desire. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to obtain or achieve. There is no personal desire because transcendence isn't personal. Nor is transcendence impersonal. Transcendence is transpersonal, holding within itself the potentiality of manifesting in one way or the other, the personal way or the impersonal way. But that personal way is the way of the person in whom all evil-mindedness has been burnt out. We must remember that. We can't burn out our evil-mindedness deliberately. As I have said again and again, watch it. Just look at it. And if you look steadily enough, then the trouble will disappear. Supposing a storm breaks out, can I stop that storm? Oh no. All I can do is to just wait patiently and see the storm expending itself. And if we look at all our troubles and difficulties, our confusions and our illnesses, in a similar spirit, look at it carefully, it will expend itself. But look at it really intelligently. That is to say, understanding the significance of it, the meaning of it for us. And then one penetrates into the inner causes which give rise to this outward storm in our own psyche. If we don't understand that, and we alone can look and understand that, no one else can tell us that. Your psychiatrist, your analyst, they only touch the surface and they prescribe according to their own conditioned knowledge. So it may help, but it won't go very far. So stand on your own feet. Call upon your own strength. And remember that your own strength, inwardly, your virtue, is invincible. What you draw from within yourself is the true comfort. And remember that the word comfort simply means with strength. Con, together with, force fortis, the Latin strength. It's your soul strength. That is comfort. If you have released that power of comfort within yourself, you become a comforter to everybody else also. And you comfort others by being the vehicle, the instrument for spreading the truth. You remember the words of Jesus in St. John's Gospel? If I go not away, the Comforter will not come to you. And he tells you what the Comforter is, the Spirit of Truth. It's that Spirit of Truth which in the Rig Veda we have presented to us as Rutta, is inherent in every one of us, in everything, right throughout the universe. The whole universe has that inherent in it. There's no need to hope or pray for comfort or anything like that. It is there. All one has to do is to be in such a state within oneself that it meets with no obstruction from the psychophysical organism. And then it functions freely. That does not mean that life will go pleasantly in the way you have desired it to go. Does not mean that. It may very well necessitate the breaking down, the dissolution, the explosive disruption of things which are ill in us. But that explosive disruption, that removal of the blockage, has to come from within oneself. And it comes via the deeps of consciousness. For via the deeps of consciousness, it enters into into your own brain as such, and you begin to see in practical terms just what to do. And that way you will find your liberation in the true sense. You don't need to join women's lib or men's lib or anything like that. Liberation is liberation, and it is a wonderful state. When all the obstructive delusions that we have in terms of our assumptions, our preconceptions, our prejudices and our biases, when we have examined them, when we see them clearly, really see them clearly, then they disappear. That psychical energy which expresses itself in evil ways, in false ways, breaks up and reforms. It is not lost. There is no psychical energy which is lost. It reforms into healthy form, into healthy structures. And therefore the heart and the mind experience that pure state. I've mentioned assumptions, preconceptions, prejudices and biases. That deals more or less essentially with our intellectual aspect. With our feeling aspect, there is the moral, the ordinary morality of the heart as such, the virtues which we express in dualistic terms when we talk of love and kindness and helpfulness, generosity and all the rest of it. Because when we talk of it, there is always the implication of its opposite. And the implication of that opposite finally dissolves away altogether as one remains mindful, fully awake. You are the children of the new dawn. You have to accept your responsibility. I should say, we are the children of the new dawn. And we must accept that responsibility of being the children of the new dawn, which implies that we must be very quiet and not impose what we believe to be our knowledge and light upon society, upon anyone whatsoever. There must be no imposition. Quietly carry on. Veil the light within you. Veil it. Don't show it in full blaze to others, because others may not need it for one thing, they may not want it, they will reject it, and it might blind them, confuse them more than ever and blind them. So don't do that. If your fellow human being requests some of the light from you, earnestly, seriously requests, and you have the intelligence to see just what his real inward need is, his spiritual need is, then remove that veil only a little bit. Let a little light go first. And if that little light will affect its healing on your fellow human being, then unveil it more and more if he desires it. Otherwise, hide your light under a bushel. That is very important. Now, we shall be going out into the world of what? Turmoil, conflict, difficulty, trouble, problems, etc., etc., etc. And we shall immediately think of all these things as problems to be solved and so forth. There is only one real problem, that is my own self. I am the problem. Just as I am the block which prevents the light coming through, the blockhead, if you like. You see, I am the problem myself. And the problem can be seen in this way. Anything which I do not really understand when I look, when I listen, when I touch or taste or anything, that which I do not understand clearly, fully, then I am in the state of a problem. I am the problem. If I can look, if I can truly listen, then there is no problem. This is something which Krishnamurti has taught us better than anybody else. The art of looking, the art of listening, the art of observing. Man is the observer. From being the observer involved in the process of the universe, when he has arrived at the pitch of understanding, he becomes the silent watcher. He becomes the silent watcher because he who is really enlightened, who is really wise, will never interfere with the world process. I've done this myself during my young years, so I know what I'm talking about. We are interferers with the world process. And we are interferers because we are so conceited. We are so vain. We are so egoistic. So self-obtrusive upon the world. Instead of being no hindrance to the world process. So bear all these things in mind, and the fact of you being the children of the new dawn will manifest itself beautifully and quietly. You know that some of the most beautiful hymns in the Rig Veda are hymns to the dawn, the goddess of the dawn, Ushas. Ushas, Aurora, Aurora of the Greeks. That is Ushas, the goddess. And that dawn, and the drawing of the dawn chariot by the steeds of the goddess, represent the emergence of the first vision and the first light as regards our own nature, as regards the purpose of our existence in this world, and the manner in which the restoration to transcendence can proceed apace. That is the dawn. So we are the children of the new dawn, and God knows how much the world needs this new dawn. It's desperately in need of it. Can we shoulder our responsibilities? Will we have the strength? And our responsibility is not to go out into the world spreading good. Who am I to spread good? No less a perfected one, a holy one, than Jesus said, "Why callest thou me good? There is only one that is good, and that is God." Well now, who is good? Who is wise? He who is selfless, he who is silent and still within his own mind and heart, that man is the true lover, the truly wise one. He is the one who is the truly practical one. Because the healing work, the whole-making work, the release into holiness is something which is effected through selflessness. The ego is there, of course, because the psychophysical organism is there. But it is entirely free of isolative self-consciousness with respect to all human beings and of separative self-consciousness with respect to all objects in the world and throughout the universe. When that isolativeness and separativeness has disappeared from self-consciousness, then that self has really become the truth, the way and the life. When that person says, I or I am, and the Buddha constantly used the term aham, all the great teachers used the word I, it is the limited I which has completely freed itself from its limitations and become united with the total I. This is something which people don't appreciate or understand, especially in Buddhist teaching, since this I am I is completely wiped out in the Buddhist analysis, how it was that the Buddha constantly used the word I. There is only one I, the total I, the one and only I am, the ehye asher ehye, I am that I am, as the Lord God advised Moses to say when the Israelites asked him, who hath sent you? I am, who are you and who hath sent you? I am that I am. There is the divine mandate there. So if we can become free of selfness and become truly selfless, then we as individuals who are in tune with the universe can do the right work and be the instrument through which the light of divinity itself will shine. Others will see it, and if they won't see it, it does not matter at all. There is a whole universe watching each one of us. Don't forget that. We are not alone. We are not isolated. Can I, as just this separate person, be here and exist if there were no light or heat or air or you or all the other things that make up this world? Can there be a self, which is me, separately, if the total not-self were not there? Quite impossible. You see, the extraordinary unitariness and holiness of this totality, this wholeness. So it is through selflessness principally that one can see this, one can deal with it. And in the stillness, the quiet, there will emerge the power, the true strength of the soul, virtue, virtus. Vir, the Latin vir means man, a man. It's the term for a man. And virtus is the strength of the man, the strength of him as a psychophysical being, not merely as a physical being, a champion weightlifter or something, but his psyche, his whole psyche. When it is purified, then you are the omnipotent one, you are the invincible one, because you do not resist anything, but become rightly related to anything and everything. So let me wish you all the happiness that emerges out of that sort of state. And that happiness is something which is quite indescribable and indestructible. No one can take it away from you. No one else can give it to you. It is there within your being. It is constitutive of you, that happiness. And the great teachers, the founders of the religions and the great spiritual teachers were fundamentally concerned with our well-being, not ill-being, our well-being and our happiness. Now, if we understand that and we can put ourselves in tune with the source of all life, the creative source of all life and well-being and so forth, then it will happen by itself. So I wish you all that when you go out into the world now, in an hour's time or so, and may it sustain you through all the trials and tribulations which will inevitably come upon you, as it does upon everybody, and you will come through selfless, pure, fully human, and your life will be the truly human life. My gratitude and thanks to each and every one of you. And I do this sort of thing because I care for everyone's well-being and happiness. I really care for it. But I do not care for it with any specified picture in my mind of what that person ought to be or ought to do. You are completely free. But freedom is a dread responsibility. A really, really dread responsibility. Because it is our delusion that freedom means living according to what I, the limited self, likes, wants, desires. When all that humbug is out, then the light of transcendence will shine through every one of us. Thank you.